Welcome to NESG Radio. My name is Shay Vincent. I am your host for today. Our focus for today is World Population Day, which is designated on July 11th every year. World Population Day was established by the United Nations to raise awareness about global population issues and to highlight the importance of population issues in the context of overall development goals. So I'm very glad to have with me today Dr. Lars Ude Eze. Welcome, Dr. Lars Ude Eze.
Thank you very much. Thanks for having me, Dr. Shay.
All right. So Dr. Eze is a public health physician, health policy advocate, and sustainable development consultant. He is the founder and chief executive officer of Talk Health Real Media Limited, popularly known as Talk Health Niger, a fast-growing health communications and public health information management organization. He is also the founder and national team lead of the Make Our Hospital Work campaign, a citizen-led community-based advocacy for optimal functioning of health facilities in Nigeria. Dr. Lars has over 16 years of professional working experience in public health, project management, development consultancy services, clinical practice, and health research. So we're very pleased to have Dr. Lars here with us, speaking to us about World Population Day and related issues. All right, so Dr. Lars, let's just jump right in. So, World Population Day serves as a critical reminder of global population challenges and opportunities. Could you share your insights on its significance and the key themes it aims to address?
Yes, thank you very much, Shay, once again. Thanks to listeners. Yes, as you rightly mentioned, the World Population Day seeks to draw attention to population issues and getting them linked to development. And since 1989, when the United Nations approved this day, it's looked at issues relating to poverty, relating to health, relating to, and most recently with the Sustainable Development Goals, the environment, climate change, and so many other issues have become topical. So as the world population keeps growing, in 1989 when this day started was when the world population reached 5 billion, you know. So but right now the world population is over 8 billion. Just in 3 decades it's added over 3 billion. So more like an average of 1 billion more people per year. And this is crucial in ensuring that for there to be sustainable development, we must look at the what affects the population, how the population is growing, and how the population can be most comfortable.
Great. Thank you very much for that background. Okay, so understanding the drivers of population growth is clearly very crucial for planning and development. So you've already talked about so the enormous growth we've had of about 3 billion in 3 decades. So could you outline the primary factors contributing to Nigeria's population growth?
Yes, the primary factors contributing to Nigeria's population growth, they are diverse in my opinion. Let's look at culture and tradition. And also our belief system. As an African society, our tradition promotes having as many wives and having as many children because we feel is a gift from God. And some use this cliche that it's God that gives children, and God will not give children that, you know, can't be taken care of. Some we say it's God that, you know, takes care of children. So we could have as many polygamy is cultural, is acceptable in our tradition, then the belief system is also diverse, as it were. And even religious wise, you know, Nigeria is a multi-religious, is a secular society, so it's multi-religious. While most of the Christians promote monogamy, you know, the other two religions as classified, whether it's African traditional religion or Islamic religion, you know, is fine with polygamy for those who could have that. So that in itself, you know, is a factor, and of course nothing absolutely wrong with that in my opinion. Then but it's about people knowing that okay, you should have as many children as you can comfortably take care of. Another background factor is also lack of jobs, unemployment. You know, when people are not gainfully employed, you know, there is a chance that they have more time to engage in sexual activity. There's also a factor of poor education. So we know that for people, especially girls, who do not complete secondary education or even go for higher education, there is a higher chance that they get earlier into reproduction. And if they begin reproduction earlier, there's also a higher chance they could have many more children than they ordinarily have. Then giving out children into marriage, child marriage as it's being called, is also a factor which is relatable to that of education. You know, because if, for example, we ensure that every girl child at least completes secondary school, many of them will be completing their secondary school when they are perhaps 17, 18 or thereabout, you know, before they start thinking of getting into marriage. So not completing schools, at least secondary education, for particularly the girl child is an enabler, you know, for some uncontrolled rapid population growth in our environment. We also have this factor of non-use of contraception for those who are perhaps not married, or even those who are married, you know, modern contraceptive methods. You know, we contraceptive prevalence rate is low, which is perhaps those who are using it. And there's also unmet needs, which is about 20%. So even though it's not everybody that wants to use it, even for those who want to use it, who are requesting for it, there is not even available enough to meet the demand for it. You know, so those are some background factors. Of course, our health system, there's a lot of ignorance. There's also a lot of misconception and misinformation, you know, related to issues about family planning or use of contraception. So these are some relevant factors that contribute in various ways to our population and population growth in Nigeria, which is rapid, because our population growth is actually faster than our economic growth, which is one of the challenges we're affecting our development at the moment.
Exactly. Fantastic. Thank you so much for breaking down those issues for us. So yeah, so you mentioned healthcare and education, of course, two very critical issues when it comes to development. So meeting the healthcare and educational needs of a growing population is a very significant challenge, and I think it's something that we also face in Nigeria. So from your perspective, what are the key obstacles Nigeria faces in these areas?
Yes, let me begin with the health needs. How much do we even know about this? What's our level of health education? You know, the Alma Ata Declaration of 1978, where the concept of primary health care, you know, it was promulgated, as it were, defined clearly the roles of communities, the need for community participation. And one of the primary key functions of primary healthcare is health education and promotion, which is very crucial because the people would not be able to participate in what they don't know. So the health workers at the primary healthcare level, part of their key responsibilities, promoting and educating health within the community where they work. So, and well, the health issues is not entirely about when someone is sick. So health education is promoting health and well-being, and as the World Health Organization defined it, is the complete state of physical, mental, and social well-being, and not just the absence of disease or infirmity. So the primary essence of health is stopping sickness or illness or ill health from even starting in the first place. And if for any reason, despite every measure, there is ill health, to pick it early enough, or there is anything that could threaten our health, prevent it from happening. If it begins to happen, pick it up early enough and get it solved. So as it has to do with our population, do we have sufficient information among our communities, among the people, on the need to have as many children as we should be able to take care of, to plan for that? Do they see themselves, you know, are they well informed to make that decision on their own? Children are very, you know, reproduction is something that is very good. There's absolutely nothing wrong with having children. They are a precious gift from God. If our parents don't have us, we'll not be here, you know. So the whole essence of moderating the population growth is not to stop people from having children, is to ensure that we are in a world where we have children and we have the resources to be able to cater for them and give them the best possible quality of life, provide opportunities for everyone, you know, to live an enjoyable life. So as it has to do with us in Nigeria, our primary healthcare system is not optimal. And primary healthcare is not just buildings, health centers. There's a difference between primary healthcare and primary health center. You know, so the center is building the facility, which is a component of the entire primary health system. So in ensuring that we are able to provide healthcare and education to our growing population, it begins from that primary healthcare. So health education and promotion is already bringing the education component. So as part of it, education system have primary school, secondary school. Health education is one of the courses that is being done in school, which is fine. But there is also health education and promotion activities that should be done in communities. And that will begin to ensure that the community. So talking about the challenges now, because we need to understand what the normal should be before we will talk about the abnormal. So what are those challenges? We do not have health committees in communities. The National Health Act 2014 provides that every village, every community should have a health committee. That's like the Minister of Health at that level, just as we have at the states, federal, local health authorities. Health is a 24/7 thing, you know, that we are alive. The health need for health is an every minute, every day thing. So, and that's why every committee should have a statutory committee, you know, made up of people who have community interest. It must not be made up of health workers. If you have health workers, fantastic, you need them. But it doesn't mean that everybody in the committee must be health workers. It's just people who are willing to provide their time for community service, and they have responsibilities that are clearly defined by the national the World Health Systems policy of the National Primary Healthcare Development Agency. So that's a starting point. The fact that we do not have health committees is a gap and is a challenge, because the roles of communities in promoting healthcare, you know, and promoting health generally to the population is minimal. The community is not providing opportunities for the technical people or healthcare providers to give them education in the language they will understand, you know. So, and that's in a way is contributing generally to our population issues, because when people do not have information on preventing some communicable diseases, they get the disease, and they will spend money that should be used for food will be used on drugs, and people will be malnourished. Money that could have been used to train the children for education might be used to be spent on paying the hospital bills of parents or even some other persons. So it's making resources that should have been used to provide other needs of the population to go into perhaps a treatment, which for conditions that could have as well been prevented, you know. So, and education is also critical. Basic age, Nigeria has one of the highest number of out of school children in the world, you know. So 20% of out of school children globally are in Nigeria, which is not good. So, and these also have critical impact of our population. And it's also known that you relate this to the economy. Graduates in sub-Saharan Africa, they earn 21% of them, or they earn 21% higher than non-graduates, you know. So there is a link up to the education and also economic well-being of the population. So a lot of challenges we face as a country in terms of providing healthcare and education to this growing population arises is a kind of egg and chicken relationship. You know, the lack of these affect the population, and at the same time may lead to unmitigated or high rate of population growth, which in itself will worsen our health situation and worsen our ability to educate the population. Because when we are outgrowing the existing facilities, it reduces the quality of education. It reduces even access to providing quality education or quality healthcare. So these are some critical challenges trying to paint it from the basics at our community level, on issues that are related to our population.
Thank you very much, Dr. Lars. Yeah, so there's some very thorny issues that we contend with Nigeria when it comes to health and education. Thank you for outlining those for us. And, you know, hopefully we're able to resolve these situations, these challenges as we move forward as a country. Okay, so now, you know, you've mentioned poverty and economic development. So population growth, like we've talked about, often intersects with socioeconomic issues. How do you see Nigeria's population growth influencing poverty levels and economic development? So you've already sort of touched on this with education and, you know, the implications that has for poverty. So would you like to just speak a bit more on this intersection for us?
Thank you very much. Our population is growing at the rate of, I think, currently is it 2.6%? The one that is used to calculate the annual estimate, population estimate, you know. But our economy, especially post-COVID, or even before COVID, we had a couple of economic recessions where we had negative economic growth. You know, our economic growth has not gotten up to our population growth. you know, so which is a huge concern for our population. What are these implications, the intersection between issues of poverty? The multidimensional poverty index of 2021 estimated that about 133 million Nigerians are in multidimensional poverty. That's huge, out of over 220 million population. And that's even before we have the current economic nosedive, high inflation that the country has been experiencing since last year. So there is direct correlation between the poverty issues and our population growth, because when the number of people are increasing faster than the resources that is available, that creates huge problems. In terms of housing, looking at it from different sectoral areas, okay, let's look at housing. When people are born, they live in a house. So now we have housing challenges, especially in urban areas of the country. You see people even sleeping in uncompleted buildings. You see overcrowding, you know, families living in a space that, you know, maybe a space that should be for five persons. You see more than five persons staying there. So what that means, if someone picks a communicable disease, the chance that it will spread very quickly among them is there. And the environment also kind of shapes how we grow, how we think. There is competition for resources, you know, within those environments. Then on health, there is huge pressure on existing health facilities, or even like for children immunization and the maternal and child health services. So when at this rate we keep spending more on trying to immunize our children, which the government sponsors and is provides free of charge, you know, government is doing that and is even trying to get people to get immunized. But as they're getting immunized and getting into school, are the school educational facilities enough? If, for instance, the school has a capacity of taking 300 people and you have 500 people, the implication could be that either they are in the school and they're overcrowded, which will affect their quality of learning. And the poor quality of learning will also mean poor quality of skills and lower productivity, because they cannot give what they don't have. And again, some who are unable to stay in school will now drop out of school, because school is not fun. It's not, the environment is not conducive. And that in itself leads to high illiteracy rates with its own implications. And that's a recipe for potential intergenerational poverty, when these people are not getting the right skills they need, because the basic education is structured in a way that you acquire knowledge which the brain needs to grow, and also you pick up some skills while in school, gain knowledge that will help those people to be more productive. And it has its own implication on health as well, when the education is poor, and even in families, because they are many, they are unable to take care of all of them. You see them allowing their children to, especially the girl child, to get married off, so that, oh, go and marry so that your husband will take full responsibility for you, for your food and for your whatever you're doing, so that we have less number of persons to take care of. So and that in itself perpetuates poverty. The girl gets married without having any skill. It might get in there and have a risk of even being maltreated, you know, because one is a child, two, no skill, 100% dependent on the husband economically. And if anything happens to the husband, if the husband is ill or indisposed or dead, you know, you see the woman being so helpless and unable to provide for the children. And again, in decision making, a poorly educated girl child, you know, it affects the children, because both their decisions in taking care of children, there is a correlation between poor education in the girl child and worse health indices among the children. So those who are more educated are more likely to take better care of their children, and you know, making decisions that will promote the health promote child health. So all these things get connected to store our economic development. So it becomes very critical that we moderate the growth. And data also showed that, you know, people who are poorer tend to have more children than those who are richer. And if you look at the Nigerian poverty, like the fertility rate is about like 5 children, you know, per woman. So if you break it down by geopolitical zone, Southwest has like 3.9, but you don't have 0.9%, so you can say 4. Then Northwest has like 7. So, and economic rate in the country, Lagos is in the Southwest, you know, so you could also see that economic wise, Southwest is, you know, where you have most people having jobs and having economic activities. They tend to have less children, you know, for the lower fertility rate compared to Northwest, where the most of the poorest 10 poorest states in Nigeria, probably, you know, half of them will probably be from the Northwest, you know, so higher fertility rate. So these things affect each other. You're having more children where there is less to take care of them. So we need to get this moderated, simply for people to be able to have children that they can take care of. That's the starting point. And in making those decisions is an interplay of education, health, and economy.
Okay, thank you so much. Okay, so we've spoken a lot about children, you know, Nigeria's youth, and, you know, some of the challenges that exist, but there is still hope. We know that Nigeria's youth population presents opportunities for economic growth. What strategies do you think Nigeria can adopt to harness this demographic dividend for innovation and development?
Yes, I quite agree that youth population provides huge opportunity for us as a country. I feel that Nigeria's biggest resource is the human resource, and particularly young people, the youth. And that's the good news. And it can also be a time bomb if we do not harness this population. So the about 7 out of 10 Nigerians are below the age of 35. So, and even out of these, those who are less than 15 years are, you know, probably over 40%, I think about 42% of the population. So it provides an opportunity for us to use and grow the economy, grow the people, and push for the achievement of the sustainable development goals. And how do we do this? Investing in the youth, investing in our young people. What are those investments? Key things, skills, get them busy. You know, the youth have lots of energy, they have time, they can be innovative. And the 21st century young people are much more informed than even the generations that were able to invent most of the things we are doing today, because of the technology, information technology, the internet, that's kind of democratized information. And at a much younger age, people are getting and assimilating information. The brain is storing it, and they can actually do wonders if given the appropriate exposure. So we need to invest sufficiently in our basic education system. I was reading the National Policy on Education 2014 on what our education, very beautiful document, excellent provisions. Then, but I asked myself, why is this policy so robust? And the reality is so far from what we've articulated as a country. So investing in our young people begins from there, begins from even cradle, from when they are born. Education begins from birth. Nutrition, exclusive breastfeeding, maternal nutrition, because when a mother is well fed is when the mother will be able to produce sufficient milk for the baby. So if we should have even nutritional, I know there are nutritional programs that have supplements for children, we should even possibly have a package for mothers as well, especially breastfeeding mothers. Because the brain controls everything we do. And when the brain is growing well, brain grows well with proper nutrition. So children who are properly nourished appear to have better IQs than those who are malnourished. And there are sufficient evidences to that. So it even begins from birth and having good nutrition for the children, immunizing them to protect them from vaccine preventable diseases, and also ensuring that the environment is clean, water and sanitation. They have access to potable water, clean water that is safe for the body, not the ones that will cause cholera, diarrhea diseases, which is one of the common top causes of under five mortality. So we have this, and they get into school at the appropriate time, from nursery to primary. And while in school, they should be taught skills, knowledge that is useful, that is beneficial for the 21st century, not necessarily things that they don't need. And good enough, over the past few years, our education curriculum has kind of been modified to have those kind of policy framework to make that happen. But we need to make it happen. They should have places they play. Schools, public and private, should have safe places that children will play, because when they run around and play using some toys and tools to play, it helps in the development of their brain. All schools in Nigeria, primary, secondary, public or private, should have toilets, clean toilets. This is very crucial, especially for particularly for even girls. Those toilets should have both separate for boys and girls, and they have to be clean, because when they do open defecation, it has a lot of implications apart from polluting the environment and spreading some diseases. It also predisposes young girls to rape, where if they go to bush to use to ease themselves, they stand the risk of also people who might be there smoking or doing something else to rape them. So it makes young people and students also vulnerable to even wild animal attack. And some might even step on snake or broken bottles. So these things are very crucial to have school environment. And when they have those injuries, it makes them stay out of school. They miss some classes and it affects them. Controlling malaria. Malaria is one of the common causes of people missing school. So if we control the environment, stop breeding of malaria, and we control my, it will reduce the number of days that people take out to stay out of school to treat malaria. So you could see the intersection in all of these: health, education, and investing in young people. Those formative ages are very crucial. Then we show that all of them are educated at the minimum a basic level, which is 9 years of education. Technology and science, STEM, technology, engineering, mathematics, intro tech. There's this course we did in secondary school. I don't know if it has changed, the introductory technology, where you learn how to even wire a house. They do it in just 1-3. Basic technology skills. Our schools should be equipped. It's not just reciting, memorizing things and saying them back. Everybody should have one skill or the other, and this can be learned in schools, so that all these ad hoc interventionist methods that we're trying to do, tokenism, is not the way to go. Let's bring everything our young people need to learn into the education system, up to the universities. Let those studying engineering acquire as many skills as they can while in school. And even while in school, those in agriculture should be farms, that students will be doing their practical, and those practical will result in produce that the school will even use to generate money, have IGR for the polytechnics and universities or tertiary institutions where these people are. So these young people are schooling. While they are schooling, they have hands-on, they are learning, and at the same time contributing to the economy and contributing to national development. So anybody that is leaving school will be prepared to work, you know, no matter the level of education. They will have some skills already. That's the best for our young people, because a lot of Nigerian youths are hardworking, they are willing to do things, but the system is not giving them necessary support, it's not empowering them enough. So you see people, even those who graduate, they have certificates, but not many of them have skills. The soft skills are there, technology. Schools should have computer laboratories, learn basic technological skills, you know, have debate societies so that people can use their IQ and do critical thinking and query things, you know, have debates and things like that. Tertiary institutions should encourage young people to organize credible elections, do politics as students, you know, not proscribe student union because people express themselves. So these are things that will make young people learn, acquire skills from different this thing, and they'll be ready to work. In conclusion, harnessing our demographic dividend is very critical, because already we are seeing the signs of not harnessing this by a lot of people, young people channeling their energy negatively, and high unemployment rate, not having, even employers are struggling to find people who have the necessary skills to be employed. So it's one of the, even though we do not have enough jobs for young people, but we also don't have enough young people for available jobs due to mismatch between the skills that is required and the skills they have. You have companies having to design a program to begin another round of training for people they are hiring to be able to fit in to work. So maybe we could have more integration and partnership between these companies and schools so that these people will be able to acquire those things, you know, those qualities in school. So the young youth population is our biggest resource. And like yesterday, we must begin to be accountable, the leadership, you know, in ensuring that young people are positively engaged and busy. Without this, we'll keep having problems with national development.
Great. Thank you again, Dr. Laz. You've talked about so many important issues. And so we're very, very pleased to have all the major challenges being outlined. We talked about skills, the critical importance of skills. We also talked about health. You know, those are two critical areas, starting with even maternal health and also the health of a child, the importance for brain development. So many important issues. Talk about technology and science and the importance of that for developing skills, and also for innovative abilities of children and the youth. So thank you very much. Okay, so let's just try to wrap up now. So let's now look towards the future. So we talked about some very serious challenges that we have, and obviously something needs to be done to turn the tide. So considering future trends, what are the projections for Nigeria's population growth? From a policy perspective, which areas should be prioritized to manage this growth effectively? I think you talked about many of these issues already, but let's just sort of summarize
this. Yes, thank you very much. Yeah, in terms of policies, I think we have very good policies. Yeah, our problem is not really making new policies, or you know. So we have these policies, but the implementation is where we're having a lot of challenges, because you know, people tend to prioritize their personal interest over the good of the many, of the entire population. So I would rather be recommending implementation, because we have policies on family planning. We signed certain agreements, FP 2020 agreement, FP 2030. We make a number of commitments. Nationally, we have some very good strategic plan, you know, for malaria control. For in 2022, we have the National Mental Health Policy, 2021 National Mental Health Act, you know, National Health Insurance Authority Act in 2022, National Health Act 2014, National Education Policy 2014, you know, so many of them. Implementation is key. I like the 3MTT training that the Federal Ministry of Communications and Digital Economy is implementing, trying to train young people. I think they have the target of 3 million young people they want to train to acquire digital skills, and also supporting them to getting jobs is fantastic. And I think young people need to embrace it and take advantage of it, because ICT skills is a global skill now. You can be in Abuja and be providing services to someone in Accra or in Senegal, you know. Then also the empowerment programs. Over the past decade, the government of Nigeria at the federal and state level has spent humongous money under the name of empowerment, you know. So to what extent have this contributed to our national growth, our economic growth? You know, the more busy people are, the less our economic growth, because you know, there is evidence that people who are more idle tend to give more children. So in doing this, we need to even start from data. At the moment, every time government wants to implement anything, they start collecting data afresh. I do not know if it's because if there is any incentive for people to keep taking data every time. We have NIN, we have BVM, we have birth registration, we have all kinds of data. Can we harmonize and have concrete national data that we use to plan? And that brings me to the theme of this year's World Population Day, you know, counting everyone for sustainable development. Our last census was in 2006, that's 18 years ago. Nigeria is overripe for another national census, and hopefully we could leverage technology to know who actually we are. We keep using these projections that shows that about by 2015, currently Nigeria is the, by our population estimate, which is around 229 million. If you look at the world ometer, using 2.6% annual growth to estimate from our 140 million census of 2006 till date. So it's estimated that by 2050 we will be over 300 million, being third most populous country in the world after India and China. Well, let's even know how many we actually are, because in the past few years there's a lot of violent conflicts, killing people, rising poverty, rising death rates in many situations. So are we really the number that we are working with? That's one priority I think we should take very seriously. Then our database being as accurate as possible, because it's garbage in, garbage out. When you plan with the wrong data, the chances that the results will not be what we expect is much higher. So we need to conduct census as quickly as possible. It's expensive to do financially, our economy is not very strong, but at the same time it could also save us a lot of money, because it's possible that we are actually wasting a lot of resources by over budgeting or using numbers that are not realistic. So with these projections, we should get the numbers right. and we should get value for money for all these various empowerment programs and not make it look good on paper, but these monies find their way to people who do not need it, and small businesses that a lot of young people are trying to get going, you know, small business, they don't have access to funds. There is really no data looking at those people and giving them the support they need and tracking their growth, having a support system for young people who are doing so much. When they are growing and their business is growing, it helps overall in better economy, more jobs, more productivity, and moderated population growth.
Thank you very much, Dr. Lars. It's been a super insightful conversation with you. I'm sure our listeners will agree. So thank you once more. Thank you, yes. So we've been discussing World Population Day, which comes up July 11th. So clearly there are so many issues that are associated with population growth, but there's also hope. You know, we talked about how we can harness the demographic dividend that we have in Nigeria and some of the strategies that we can use going forward to manage the population and ensure that we can, you know, grow and develop accordingly. So thank you once again, Dr. Lars. So for other episodes of the NESD podcast, please visit www.nesgroup.org/podcast. Until next time, I've been your host, Shay Vincent. Bye for now.
Bye.